Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. As we wind down an eventful and challenging year on the Call-In Show and otherwise, we have a tasty, satisfying program for you today as we explore New Mexico holiday classic foods, traditions, and variations. We'll look at how we prepare, cherish, and use these foods and accompanying traditions and rituals to create enduring holiday tastes and memories. Joining me in the studio today for our holiday culinary exploration is native New Mexican and Los Lunas resident Teresa Valverde, who in her normal course of living grows and harvests fruits and vegetables, preserving not only those products, but her family's traditional holiday recipes and gatherings. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning. And I'm also joined in the studio by classically trained chef Rocky Durham, who began his culinary career washing dishes at a French bistro in Santa Fe at the age of 13. His path has been varied and wide, cooking in New Orleans, back in Santa Fe at Santa Cafe, writing and presenting a hit British cooking show, Plates from the States, and then returning to his hometown of Santa Fe to become culinary director of the Santa Fe School of Cooking and now executive chef and co-founder of the Santa Fe Culinary Academy. Good morning, Rocky.
Morning, Kathleen.
Morning. Thanks you both for joining me today. And Teresa Valverde, let's start with you. When I spoke with you on the phone a few days ago, you expressed surprise that anyone would find what you do, what you grow, raise, cultivate, preserve, cook, and create to be unusual or exemplary. Why does that surprise you?
Kathleen, this is just the way I grew up. I'm so fortunate to have such beautiful parents that allowed me to watch what they do and to learn from them. And so it's what I grew up doing. I always was in the garden. I was always in the kitchen with my mother preserving things. And so when people say that this is just amazing, all the canning and the preserving that you do, it's just quite a treasure. And for me, it's like, oh, no, just come on in and let's go look at my pantry. It's what we do.
Well, what exactly do you grow, raise, and cultivate in Los Lunas?
Well, definitely we have our fruit trees and the fruit trees of my mother-in-law that lives right next door. We grow corn. We grow the chilies and tomatoes. We pretty much have a smaller garden as far as our focus. We don't do a lot of different things. And so what we do is everything that we produce, we have made a commitment that we need to preserve. And so we used to always give things away, but now we have made a commitment to plant just what we need.
And now, do you raise any animals at all on your land as well?
Yes, right now we have three cows, and so we raise cows. In the past, we've had chickens and pigs and lambs, and the kids were in 4-H, and so this has just been our life.
And that's the way you expect it to stay as well, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I can't imagine anything different.
Well, and tell us a little bit, just before the program, we were talking about your last name, Valverde, and how that resonates with you, if you want to share that.
Well, thank you. Yes, my name is Valverde, and the translation of that is Green Valley. And I just can't imagine that I would ever have a life outside the Green Valley. I just enjoy living next to an acequia, to growing crops. The Green Valley is just who I am. So I definitely married the best man for me with the best name.
fitting. Now, Chef Rocky Durham, you've grown restaurants and television shows and now a new culinary academy. After cooking professionally on five continents, what brought you back to New Mexico?
Well, I'm a fiercely proud native New Mexican. And I think when you have that in you, it's really hard to imagine existence elsewhere. I lived for 10 years abroad, and the entire time I missed home. Whenever I'd come back to Santa Fe or New Mexico for a visit, I'd buy some of those pinon incense that you can get like at the airport gift shop, and I'd burn them in my apartment wherever I was living and kind of like just imagine that I was outside during the Christmas season smelling the pinon fire. And
Well, one thing we didn't mention in the opening was that in England you opened up numerous restaurants called Santa Fe.
That's correct.
And so that must have brought back some good feelings and memories and tastes.
It sure did. And we were able to export some New Mexican ingredients, because one of the things, my feelings about New Mexican food is there's really two things we're talking about when we say New Mexican food. One are traditional configurations. The other are local ingredients. And so I make the argument that if you were even making like a French-inspired dish using entirely locally produced crops, would it not in fact be New Mexican food?
Now, tell me, see, I wanted to ask you this later, but I'm curious about, were you actually able to get Hatch green chilies?
We were. We set up a import-export company in England, and we trucked over a semi-truck full of New Mexican red chili pods and powder and frozen New Mexican green chili. They trucked it to San Diego, put it onto a shipping container, and shipped it across the Atlantic. The first shipment made it over to England unscathed. And then once we were about two-thirds of the way through that, we pulled the trigger on the next shipment, and it made it from New Mexico over to San Diego, onto the boat, through the Panama Canal. But in high seas in the Atlantic, our shipping container went overboard. So somewhere at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean right now is a shipping container full of red and green chile.
Why bother to look for sunken treasure gold when you can look for sunken red and green?
Should anything ever happen, it's important to know that is there.
Now, listen, I was going to ask you this also later, but we'll ask it now too. I don't want to offend any Brits because I don't know eating habits, but the myth or the perception is that there's a bland sort of palate or cooking regimen. Is that tell me.
That might have been the case decades ago,
okay.
but not to say that some traditional British food is not simple, but I don't think simple equals bland. Simple just equals simple. And in London, though, London's an international city, so there's food from all over the planet there, and people have very sophisticated tastes.
But we had
New Mexicans coming out of the woodwork. You wouldn't imagine how many New Mexicans there were in
right.
England. And when you open a restaurant called Santa Fe, all of a sudden they start, like, flocking to you like some kind of, you know, pilgrimage. In fact, one day I was cooking in a restaurant in London, in Islington, and one of the waiters came back to the kitchen. He was really, like, excited, and he goes, "Tom Ford is here to see you." And I know Tom Ford just, you know, peripherally from the community
in Santa Fe. The fashion designer?
Exactly.
Yes.
And the Gucci fashion designer. I guess he's off on his own now. But I didn't realize he was so famous. I thought he was just a local Santa Fean who had done pretty well for himself. And so he would come in for, like, carne adobada and some enchiladas, because you can't get anything like that anywhere near London. And then I remember about a week later, I saw his face on the cover of Esquire magazine, and I was like, "Wow, Tom's doing very well."
Well, I think, I think Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake are sort of his walking billboards for his fashion design.
Indeed.
So yes. Now tell us, you taught a class the other night, New Mexico Holiday Classics, and it was through the academy, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We offer these what we call community classes. And one of my kind of subtext of everything I'm doing there at the academy, I call building community through food education. And I like to get people from just throughout our community to come and gather at a table in one of my kitchens and prepare food and participate in feeding each other and celebrate these traditions when we're doing the real traditional stuff. And, I mean, we can celebrate traditions with contemporary food as well, but I'm sure, Teresa, I see you're nodding along with me, that our New Mexican food traditions are just steeped in history and lore, and they're ancient, and they're amazing, and I think so worthy of preservation. And these traditions have to be passed on, because if one mother doesn't show her daughter or son how to do these tamales or their traditional pozole, then we lost it. It takes one
That's
generation
great.
To disappear.
That's
all
great.
All right. So I'm going to get to you, Teresa, in a second. But what were those holiday classics that you focused on?
Okay. We only had a couple of hours. So what I did was a tamale assembly exercise. And
okay.
the way that we did that is I already had prepared masa and I already had prepared the fillings. And then I showed the participants four or five different ways to configure tamales, because there's different ways to fold and tie and what have you, and some of them have different names. And so we demonstrated that. Then everyone participated in the tamalada of making the tamales themselves. And then as they were steaming, I demonstrated how to prepare masa for tamales and how to – I made a red chili sauce, and then we showed them how to then they had the missing piece – of how to make the components for the tamales they had just assembled.
Okay. And so what? So just briefly, what were the other were tamales? The only thing that you...
No, we did pozole.
Okay.
And then I made some bizcochitos.
Okay.
And we did have some tortillas just to... Because you need something to sop up the red and green.
You don't want to waste that. That's
yes.
For sure. Now, Teresa, let's get back to you. And I know you've enjoyed hearing everything that Rocky's talked about. Let's first find out what you would add to that list of New Mexico holiday classics, if anything.
Well, first of all, before I forget,
all right.
when he was speaking, I just was thinking, wow, how wonderful these students in his class were. But without any due disrespect to Rocky, I had the best educator in tamale making, and that would be my mother-in-law. She was just the best teacher. She taught me how to exactly how to do things. And when she was teaching me, she would throw everything in a pan, and I would have to go back and say, "Oh, what is that? How many cups is that? Oh no, this is my." She would measure salt in her palm of her hand, and so I would have to run back and see exactly what that measurement would be. And so after that, after many times of her preparing the masa, it was my turn to do it on my own. And so it's so nice, and he is absolutely correct when he says that if people don't carry this tradition on, it is truly lost. One of the other traditions that I carry on, this was tamale making is a big tradition in my mother-in-law's family, in my husband's family. In my family, it's empanaditas. And there's many different types of empanaditas. Traditional empanaditas are deep fried. They're made with fruit, and they're also made with meat. My mother used to make both of them, my mother and father. And we always deep fried them. But back, about 40 years ago, possibly even longer, my days are quickly passing me by. My mother was frying. We were frying. We had a big family gathering. Everybody was assembling our cherished empanaditas. And we set the oil to cool. We had completed our day, and the oil burned her. She was straining the oil, and it fell, and it burned her. And after that, we changed our tradition. So we no longer do the deep-fried empanaditas. We do the baked. And so that's the tradition that I'm carrying on.
Okay, now tell me, please, and tell our audience, because we're on radio here, give us your best description of an empanadita, please.
It is a beautiful little circle that you stuff with fruits that you have cultivated during the year. It is dried fruits that you make a mixture with, and you put it in the little circle, and you fold the circle over. And my sister Flora is just the perfectionist of sealing it, and it's sealing it with a rope like with that you do with your thumb and your forefinger, and that's in itself just a beautiful talent. And so you seal it, and then you bake it, and you dust it with sugar and cinnamon.
Now, we'll hope to get your recipe up later today. One of the things, when I looked at it, it was missing a measurement. It said 1 3/4 shortening. So I need to get that, whether it's cups or teaspoons or tablespoons. I thought, this is pretty important. So as soon as we can do that, we'll get that up, as well as your website, Rocky. But we will have that for people. I do want to let our listeners know we're talking today about New Mexico holiday food traditions. I'm joined by Chef Rocky Durham, who now is with the Santa Fe Culinary Academy. And I'm also joined by Teresa Valverde, who has just a wonderful tradition she's carrying on, growing and preserving and then creating empanaditas for and with her family. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage at kunm.org. You may call our local number, 5866, that's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. Tell us, what are your favorite New Mexico holiday foods and traditions? We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
This week on This American Life.
I believe I got my dad a Sons of Anarchy t-shirt. I don't believe I've ever seen him wear it.
When you're a kid, it's just hard to think of Christmas presents for your parents.
Do you dread this process? Yes. You have no idea what you're going to get them at all. No, I do not.
Desperately hoping it's the thought that counts this week.
Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUNM.
This Friday on Audio Revolution, Youth Media Project celebrates highlights from the 2013 production season. Hear from the after-school production team and community partners like the United World College, Real Fathers, and Capital High School. Tune in for stories about personal struggle, rites of passage, technology, family issues, and spirituality. Join the celebration at 8 a.m. on KUNM 89.9 FM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and I'm joined today by Chef Rocky Durham and Teresa Valverde. We're talking about New Mexico holiday food traditions, and we invite you to join in our program. All right, Rocky and Teresa, so far we've heard about tamales pozol or pozole, bizcochitos with a Z or an S, tortillas, empanaditas. What else would we add to that list of holiday New Mexico holiday foods?
You know, it's a... I'm a first-generation New Mexican. So my folks came from – my mom's from New Jersey and my dad was from Long Island, New York. But I was born here in New Mexico, and I still to this day will give my mom – you know, I'll tease her about that when she starts talking about New Mexican things. I'm like, Mom, you're not even from here. You know, you're from like New Jersey or something. And so at first my – you know, my first holiday traditions were of those East Coast, you know, traditions that my parents brought with them. But as I entered grade school – and started to experience other cultures through my classmates and what have you. I was, you know, like the token gringo in a lot of my, you know, earlier classes. And it was, there's something to me about chicken enchiladas that remind me of Christmas. And it's because a woman who named Lucy Jenks, who is still a great friend of the family, and she's over 90 years old now, she used to make us Christmas dinner every year. And she would bring this big pan of chicken enchiladas, and we would have them for maybe a week after that. And they just seemed to get better and better and better as they each time you reheated them or have it for breakfast with an egg on top. And so those come to mind as well, those specific flavors.
And how about you, Teresa? Anything you wanted to add to that list?
Well, I would have to go with the red chili enchiladas. And we cannot have a Christmas breakfast without red chili enchiladas. So I make a big batch, and we have to have homemade tortillas. Mm-hmm. That is one of my specialties, and one of the treasures that I also carry on is making tortillas. And and I am extremely stingy with my tortillas.
I am too. I
am so gracious with so much that's in my pantry, but my tortillas, I will hang on to those. Those are cherished gems.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. It's Melissa from Albuquerque who wants to sing the praises of bizcochitos. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Yes, bizcochitos have been a part of our family tradition, and I was born and raised here in New Mexico in Santa Fe, and it was always a tradition to do midnight mass and come home and have the Mexican hot chocolate with the molinello to frost the chocolate, and then the bizcochitos.
Okay, will you tell me what molinero is?
Molinello is a. Molinello. Okay. It was like the early egg beater. It's a wooden stick with a number of loose tiles that are on a spindle, and you roll it between your hands to froth.
Okay, now Rocky was giving me a demonstration here, and now I understand what it is. Well, let's see if either of our guests want to talk with you about bizcochitos.
Sure.
Anybody? Yeah, Rocky, go ahead.
I love the bizcochito and chocolate, you know, tradition as well. And we called that device a molinillo. And
molinillo.
I'm not sure if it's just, you know, sometimes they say say it differently, but I'm reminded of a song that children would sing when they made the chocolate, and they'd put the molinillo in the chocolate, and they'd sing uno, dos, tres, cho, uno, dos, tres, co, uno, dos, tres, la, uno, dos, tres, te,
yeah.
Chocolate, chocolate, bate, bate, chocolate.
Yeah, and there was a special pot for it, too. I don't have the pot, but it was always served, made in that pot, and the molinillo used to whip it. And my secret for probably contemporizing my mother's recipe certainly used lard. I used vegetable shortening, but I also, instead of the brandy or rum, use fruity white wine for my liquid.
Ooh. Interesting. Now, did you make the traditional white round bizcochitos, or what's the shape?
We used different cutters, but basically maybe like the card shapes, the diamond, the heart.
Oh,
the star, diamond, heart, spade.
Interesting. My husband's grandmother used to make a traditional bizcochito that was thicker, more biscuity, instead of thinner.
Sure.
And she used to make something that they were shaped like a crown. It was in a rectangle shape,
yeah.
and they would curl the ends. And it's amazing how the texture changes when the shape is changed. And
it's true. And a little thicker would be more shortbread like.
That's correct.
Yeah, than a cracker like. And I like that larger texture, shortbread like.
There's
great.
The
only other thing I would suggest as a part of that red chili enchilada would be a blue corn tortilla.
Yeah. All right, now Melissa Rocky wants to add something here.
You know, traditionally speaking, if we go back to some of the real origins of the bizcochito as we know it here in the New World, when Mexico got its independence from Spain in 1821, it wasn't just because of like a great revolutionary front that was taking place here in the New World. It had a lot to do with the fact that France was engaged in these protracted naval battles with Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And so Spain did not have the resources to put into policing New Spain over here in the New World.
Mm-hmm.
So this traditional cookie of Mexico, which of course this part of the land where we find ourselves sitting right now was Mexico. The traditional shape for the bizcochito was actually the fleur-de-lis.
Sure.
And it was because to do anything in a French style, or to use like a little French term every once in a while, was a very revolutionary act and very pro-Mexican.
Ah.
And so because it was anti-Spanish.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for your call
today.
And
Merry Christmas.
Yes, have wonderful holidays. Now, listen, we've got another caller on the line. It's Bill, and you spoke about the biscuity bizcochitos. He is saying nobody makes those anymore. Bill, welcome. Nice to have you on today. Talk to us a little bit about the biscuity bizcochitos.
Yes, bizcochitos means biscuit. And these new cookies with sugar, I don't appreciate at all. I'm always looking for the biscuits. Nobody knows how to make the biscuits. And that's very frustrating for me during the season.
Well, now, do you make them?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay, so at least you satisfy yourself.
Keep hold of them. They get stolen. They get just eaten up. Another thing that I like the most that nobody makes anymore is mince meat empanaditas. And mince meat tamales.
Those are just so traditional.
And exactly.
My mother, we used to sit at the kitchen table making rounds and rounds. Now, your mince meat, were the chile rellenos, were they like oblong shaped, or were they round, or how do you prepare those?
Well, just like regular tamales, and then I stuff them with mince meat and maybe some raisins.
Beautiful.
And then another thing is the empanaditas I also stuff with mince meat and raisins. Now, another thing that I don't appreciate is luminarias is to illuminate the path towards Jesus. Now they're calling them favoritos. I can't stand that. They're luminarias, and that's the way they should be. You all have a glorious holiday.
Thank you
and
so
you.
Much,
Merry
Bill.
Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Now, tell me, is minced meat actually minced meat, and what meat is used in the minced?
In my family, the tradition was a cow's tongue. And it would be cooked and peeled and grinded and then mixed with a combination of ginger and nutmeg and raisins. And so, yeah, that's the way we did
ours. Delicious.
And have you, absolutely delicious. Now, have you done that in any of your classes or?
No, not with the tongue per se, but one of the things that I encourage people to embrace is that when they see things like tamale, a lot of the people who are not familiar with this wonderful configuration feel that it only has red chili braised pork shoulder, and that's it. And so they're, it's a pork dish, when in fact it is the configuration of the tamale that makes it a tamale, and the fillings that you put inside the masa are left open to your imagination.
Endless, I imagine.
As well. Yeah. And there's every family's going to have a slightly different preparation. And like, no, we made a cheese and calabacita one, or we made, you know, there's going to be lots of different ones. I also like to encourage people to just, in an exercise of keeping this configuration alive, to invent your own, to come up with your own filling. What flavors remind you of Christmas or the holidays? You know, how can you transform that into a filling for this traditional configuration?
Well, let me remind listeners first, we're talking today about New Mexico holiday food traditions. I'm joined by Chef Rocky Durham and Teresa Valverde. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number 277-5866 or our toll-free number 1-877-899-5866 with questions and comments. Now, we've heard from listeners and we've heard from you all about holiday classic foods. Let's do a couple of quick questions to each of you, and you can take turns going first if you'd like. So, Rocky, let's start with you. Favorite holiday classic food to eat and why?
Well, it has to be the tamale, and I love the fact that it's like a little present. And I also love the fact that it's stuffed, and I love the fact that it's ancient. And I really feel this like visceral connection to these little configurations, and I just think nothing says holiday like a little present.
Okay. Favorite, Teresa, to eat and why?
In no fair, I have to do a combination. It has to be the pozol and tamal. And the reason why, and especially with a tamal, it for me, I love the food, and I'm never going to get away from the food, but I love the family gathering. I love the telling of stories. I love the sharing. It enhances the food because you have cooked it from the soul. Mm. And so anybody can put things together. Anybody can do these things, but it takes a special heart. It takes a special family to make the food taste so amazing. And one story I have of tamales. One year I was making tamales, and I had to stop making them because my husband's grandmother passed away. And we had to put the whole thing away and went through the services, and then I had to resume making tamal. And that evening, my husband and I were making them together, and we were sharing stories about my grandmother, our grandmother. And when people were eating those, they were, oh my gosh, these are beautiful, these are wonderful. And tears were coming out of people's eyes. And because when you make food with passion and you make food with heart, the flavor it comes through. And I don't know how to explain that.
Amen.
And it's happened over and over again to me.
And, you know, I thought we would continue on with these quick questions, but this seems like a great time given what you've said. No, this is perfect. This is perfect. So I was reading yesterday about a Danish word that I cannot pronounce, and it can't be translated into English, but it starts with an H, I can tell you that. And it conveys the concept of, let's say, cozy intimacy, warmth. It's like a lot of things combined. And I was preparing for the show at the time, and that word, that concept made me think of New Mexican foods and how we tend to share them in intimate gatherings. And so, Rocky, my question to you is, when a chef, or you, since you are a chef, are thinking about the creation of a dish, is there thought put into how and where it might be shared?
Oh, absolutely. I think understanding one's audience is key in the industry of cooking, when you're feeding people as a profession. You definitely have to take into account the setting, the audience, how it's going to be served, what are your resources. And there's a lot of kind of like mechanical, you know, things that go on behind the scenes that are not as as wonderful and as the story that Teresa just told, you know, of preparing them by hand for your family. It's a little bit different when you are preparing it for nameless, faceless people on the other side of a kitchen wall. However, we as culinary professionals endeavor to make each bite. We know these people are coming for a holiday meal, and it's a special time. We want the food to reflect that. We want their memories to be enriched with this meal that we're feeding them. And I totally agree with you, Teresa, that when you do have that, you know, that love and that care that's going into every step, when you're cutting the onions, you're thinking about the finished product, you're thinking about who you're serving it to, and it simply will be better than food that was just mechanically produced and assembled, even if it was from the exact same crop with the exact same recipe. And I have tried to quantify that before. Why is it that the food that we make from love, why is it better? And this is what I've come up with. Because according to physicists, one of the laws of physics is that energy and matter are neither created nor destroyed. Energy becomes matter and matter becomes energy. All right. Conservation, matter, and energy. Love is a powerful force. Love is a powerful force. And when you are exuding that energy and preparing this food, I honestly believe that it enters the food and it is present when it is consumed by another. And that love is palpable.
That's a beautiful way to think about it. Makes me think of that movie, Like Water for Chocolate.
It does.
It is,
yeah.
It is such a water for chocolate
it
moment.
It is. Very much. Let's go ahead and bring in a caller. It's Julie from Albuquerque who wants to talk a little bit more about mincemeat and her variation. Good morning, Julie.
Hi. I'm from Albuquerque. I just want to make a disclaimer. I'm not a native New Mexican. I've only lived here a little over 30 years, but I wasn't born and raised here.
Next caller, please.
No, I'm kidding.
I'm kidding, Julie.
A lot of the cooking and recipes from the area, and our family loves chili and eats all different kinds of New Mexican foods. But a few years ago, I got a recipe for vegetarian mincemeat, which I guess that's kind of a oxymoron, but I also have a garden and harvest and can. I grew up with canning as a child, and this recipe uses, and I've been frantically looking through my cookbook for it, but I can't find it right now, but that uses your green tomatoes at the end of the season and your apples, your nice tart apples and raisins and nuts and all manner of spices, and you cook it and can it. And so I made it 2 years ago and canned about 6 quarts, and then I make a pie like at Thanksgiving and at Christmas. So I haven't used the recipe in a couple of years because I've had my canned goods to see me through. But anyway, that was just a suggestion because I know there's a lot of vegetarians in Santa Fe, people who wouldn't eat meat and mincemeat, and it's absolutely delicious.
Now, listen,
it's delicious.
Well, stay on the line because as you were talking, Teresa was sitting here going, wow. So, Teresa, you want to talk with Julie?
Julie, I just think it's wonderful how you are incorporating who you are with the traditions of New Mexico. I think that is just a beautiful thing. And I very much appreciate all of you using those green tomatoes that never seem to go away in such a creative and wonderful way. And so that's what makes me so excited and makes me shine about what you're doing and how you are putting things away. So I just applaud you.
Oh, well, it's just one way in Santa Fe where you do have, well, all over now, we have more people who are not eating meat or not eating as much meat, and so that might be a variation you might want to try, but that was why I called.
All right, and Rocky wants to say something to you as well.
Well, I was just, I don't do a lot of canning, but I have done some, and not this past fall, but fall 2012, I put up gallons of apple butter. Using New Mexico
delicious.
Apples. And I was so glad that I did because, of course, this year there just weren't New Mexico apples. And I guess last week, I opened a quart of this apple butter.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just amazing. And it took me back to the year prior, and just because I love New Mexico apples. And then I've been using that quart in some dessert recipes for the past few days. I made a apple butter creme brulee.
And, oh, that's delicious.
We did, I can't remember the other dessert I was making with apple butter, but we're just, I mean, now it's back in circulation. I just love having that flavor when it was no longer available.
And you know, Rocky, you might want to consider next time you put that away is that you can get three products from that apple. You could start with the apple juice, mm-hmm. and the apple juice, you could have just, you can make your own concentrate. Then you can make apple jelly, and then with the meat of the apple, then you can do your apple butter. And so I actually use all three things, and a lot of times people just, the rest of the product, they don't use. And then the funny thing is that what's ever left, which is a very small amount, goes out for the cows.
Sure. Nothing gets wasted. That's awesome.
Thanks so much, Julie, for your call today.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful holiday.
Same to you. And we're talking about New Mexico holiday food traditions today. I'm joined by Teresa Valverde and Chef Rocky Durham. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may also call our local number, 277-586, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. When we come back from our break, we'll talk with a few more callers, and we'll hear from our guests again. This time the question is, what's your favorite food to cook and why? This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We'll be right back with you.
I'm Larry Nichols. My wife Polly and I wake up to Morning Edition. I really enjoy the children's hour, too, though I haven't been a kid in a while. We want KUNM to be around for the kids and the young at heart for many years to come. So we've included KUNM in our estate planning. If you feel, as we do, that KUNM is a treasure that should be around in the future, make this station a part of your legacy. Email Mary Oishi at KUNM.org or call 277-8006.
Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next motion up for debate, yes or no to this statement. Don't eat anything with a face.
If we can live well without causing harm, why wouldn't we do it?
The anatomy of a human is predacious.
The fact that we can live well without eating other animals, I think, is the key question here.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about New Mexico holiday food traditions. I do want to read quickly an email comment from Delfina. She said, Atol was served on Christmas Eve after midnight mass, along with buñuelos and tamales con chilito. Mmm, I'm loving this discussion. It brings back so many beautiful memories, and I'm sure she's not the only one out there thinking that. And I thank you again for being here, both of you, stirring up all these wonderful memories. So when we left, I had asked a question. And let's start with you, Teresa, first. What is your favorite New Mexico holiday classic food to cook and why?
You know, you go to the holiday in number one that comes to my mind is a tortilla. And you're saying, why would that be a holiday food? Because people don't eat tortillas homemade anymore. And so sometimes it takes the holidays to do these sort of things. And my mother always told me that when you make tortillas at home, you are able to warm three ways. First, you warm your body by preparing a big masa and rolling it out. Of course, you warm the house when the skillets come on in the stove, and you always warm the soul by when you get to consume it. So it's definitely going to be the tortillas, and then my family tradition of our empanaditas.
Okay. And Rocky, how about you?
I hate to sound one-dimensional when it comes to New Mexican holiday foods, but I love making tamales. I love making them. There's such a ritual to it, and I strive to make these just beautiful little parcels, and each one is different, and I love standing back after an afternoon of tamale making and just looking at this pile of little beautifully tied parcels, and I love that.
So it's more than the taste; it's the visual. It's all the aesthetic elements.
It hits on so many notes for me. The tactile, the spreading of the masa and the fold. I get this great satisfaction after I spread the masa on the hoja and I put the relleno in there, and then I fold the hoja over, and when you peel it back and it just comes off perfectly, and you see the texture of the hoja, the corn husk in the masa, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
Do you use white corn or yellow corn?
Well, it really depends, but white corn generally, because let me tell you something else I'm doing now. Instead of just using like water or broth to moisten the masa, I've been doing things because I like to add, there's an opportunity I find to add festive colors. And I'm not talking about food coloring, but I might make, I will put like some cilantro into a blender with some water, and I'll make like a green smoothie. And I add that to my masa, and it turns the masa like this really pretty green. Or I might use some eschiote to make it kind of an orangey red color, or even red chile itself within the masa to make it, you know, to color it. And after you steam them, that color kind of comes through the hojas as well. And so the white corn is a better template for displaying those colors as well. What about you, white or yellow corn?
Definitely the white. And it seems to come away for some reason from the hoja just a little bit better. And we make ours with the chili, like a spoonful of chili. And we don't put it in the masa, but it definitely still finds its way through the masa into the hoja. And so you put in a very yellow, whitish hoja, and then after you're completed, it's red.
Right.
It turns that beautiful
Two different processes that result in similar results. Let's bring in our next caller. It's Alma from Albuquerque, who wants to talk about special ingredients in traditional Christmas foods. Good morning, Alma. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I wanted to talk this morning about some of those specific ingredients, like in bizcochitos, how the anise seed is that one unique ingredient that I know I don't use in any other preparation, any other recipe I've ever seen. And in our family, I'm a sixth-generation New Mexican from Santa Fe, and there was always a controversy over, you use too much anise. You don't use enough, you know, and everybody has their particular taste.
Alma, I couldn't agree with you more. You were doing it just right.
The other thing, one of the other ingredients, my grandmother used to make the mincemeat empanaditas, and her special, I think, ingredient was the piñon.
Ooh,
absolutely.
So that just put them over the top.
Wow.
I love piñones. I can't believe we haven't mentioned them yet.
Yes.
Yeah, that to me really speaks of Christmas, because they were always harvested in the fall. That's piñon season. So my father used to tell this story about having to sit there and crack them with a salt shaker to be used in recipes. And my grandmother had to really watch, because two would go into the bowl for the recipe and probably three into the kids who were trying to help prepare the ingredients.
Well, let's go, you know, stay on the line with us, if you will, Alma, because do you have other dishes that you use the piñons in? Because it looks like we might just talk about that for a little bit. Or do you have anything else that you actually prepare, Alma?
Well, I prepare tamales, and that's a lot of fun. I couldn't agree more with Rocky in that it's so textural, and just you are hand-making them. I've taught my kids how to do it, and it's kind of funny because everybody has their variation. And when we're eating them, one of my children will say, "Oh, that's mine," you know, or because it's very masa-y, or it's more meaty. And it's just this sharing of something that they made that is being used to nurture everybody that really makes the holiday season for me.
And it sounds like each one is unique. If your children can actually identify, this is mine, then it gives a little pride of craftsmanship and accomplishment as well.
Oh, it does. And with the bizcochitos, I wanted to mention, a previous caller talked about the shapes. My grandmother taught me how to cut them with a knife and make designs very similar to the fleur-de-lis that Rocky mentioned. And that was because way back when, they didn't have cookie cutters. If you wanted to make a design, you had to cut the masa with a knife and then twirl it with your fingers and make some kind of design. And they're very work-intensive but beautiful. And in my opinion, it makes them all the more delicious.
It is, and it's fun just biting off those little tops first. You know, there's a certain way of eating it. You can't just eat the whole thing. You know, you have to bite the little curly tops first.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for your call this morning, Alma. So appreciate it. And so,
you.
Rocky, you wanted to talk a little bit about piñones then as well.
Well, I I love pinon so much. And it's what I mentioned earlier about the incense, and just there's so much about that little dwarf pine tree that I just think is amazing. And I get offended when I hear people who might be from a more traditionally lush green environment, and they say, that bush? And I'm like, that is a tree. That is the mighty pinon, by the way. And I love so many things about it. And when I do have the opportunity to, and New Mexican pinon, I mean, they are expensive. Because, and you would not argue if you ever had to process a couple pounds of shelled pinon, you'd charge $40 an hour just for your time to do it. But so when I use pine nuts, well, actually, I don't use pine nuts anymore just because I don't know what practices they're using in China, which is where a lot of the pine nut crop comes from. I only like to use New Mexican pinon. And it is expensive, so I'm very judicious with how I use it. And sometimes I will make things just like a pesto, but I'll have to make a small little batch, and then it becomes this real cherished ingredient because of the precious pinon that it has inside of it. But in desserts, or I can imagine little fruit empanaditas with the pinones, a little toasted pinon in there as well.
And I like to use them in like cheese spreads and things like that. It just adds, and then once you shell them and then you roast it in the oven for just a moment, the way that the oils come out and the way that the flavors just really burst.
You know, they're a superfood, pinon are. They have the great high density lipoproteins, the kind of fats they have in these, the tree fats. There's over 2,000 calories more or less per pound, and calories aren't bad. Like it's an amazing survival food. The pinon is. It's just there's so many wonderful things about it. I know a pinon joke. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
Okay. If I have one pinon, and you have two pinones, what do we have?
A difference of.
The difference of opinion. That's right. Yeah.
Fell into that one.
Excellent. Now, listen, my only regret about this show is that we are on radio and we are not in some kitchen showing some of these recipes to people and me getting to taste them. And I know our engineer, Jeff, feels the same way. So that's our only regret. Let's go to our next. We got an email question. This is an email question from Cece, who wants to know if tamales are gluten-free, especially with red chili.
Yes, absolutely. There is no gluten in corn, and I never thicken my red chili with a flour roux. I do it. It's just the grinding of the pods are what thicken the broth. So if you make them in a traditional sense, they are gluten-free.
Correct.
All right. And Cece, I hope that answers your question. Let's go to our next tiny question that I have for each of you, and let's start with you this time, Rocky. So a variation on a New Mexico holiday classic food that you have prepared?
Well, just recently I did a chili relleno. And, you know, a lot of people don't deep fry at home anymore. Unless you're deep frying all the time, there's always the danger and the quandary about what to do with the oil afterwards. You were just saying how your mother was burned with it one time. And then you have some oil that you used once. And then do I keep it under the sink until I use it again? What do I do? So I like to have recipes that were traditionally for a deep fried item or perceived as traditionally from a deep fried item that we can do in a saute pan or in the oven. And chili rellenos come to mind. So I made a chili relleno that had a picadillo, the minced meat, which included toasted almonds. Oh, I'm sorry. I had toasted pecans, dried fruits, which were cranberries, cherries, and apricots. Of course, a generous amount of chile, some olives that were chopped up in there, and a little bit of refried beans just to hold it together to make it into a cohesive mixture. I put it into some of my roasted and peeled New Mexican chiles that were sitting in the freezer waiting to become rellenos. Made a sauce that was of cream and milled nuts and brandy, and then garnish it with pomegranate seeds. So it had this real bright red and green and white kind of very festive. Kind of my version of a chili en hogada.
Now, how about you, Teresa? Have you tried a variation?
Definitely with the empanaditas because that is so traditionally fried, and it's made with a heavier dough and fried. But we have definitely gone over to the baked, and we just really love the texture of it and the flakiness of the dough.
Okay. Now, Rocky, I was going to ask you this at the end of the program, but I don't want us to miss talking a little bit about your new endeavor, the Culinary Academy. So just tell us a little bit about it. What makes it unique?
Well, the Santa Fe Culinary Academy, which is my new endeavor, I'm one of the founding members and the executive chef there. We have designed a professional curriculum that is really engineered towards people who want to have a successful career within the food service industry. Of course, we do show them how to make beautiful food, but anyone out there who's ever worked in a restaurant or owned their own business knows that it's not just about making pretty food. That's not what a successful chef is. You have to be a very switched-on business person. You have to understand marketing. You have to understand your numbers. You have to be able to control costs. You have to be able to manage individuals. It's a huge amount of stuff. So we have created a curriculum which is a departure from any other that we know exists. And all of that information is available at our website at SantaFeCulinaryAcademy.com. But what we also do, that's our one-year professional program, and that's kind of the jewel in our crown. But what we also do are our community classes, which are an opportunity for members of the local community to come and celebrate food with us. And what we generally speak in a class will be in the evening, so those of us with jobs can still participate. I have locals in mind when I made these classes. And so they come into our beautiful facility. We have like 5,000 square feet, a new kitchen. We talk about the task. We move into the kitchens. We put on aprons. We make food together. And then a couple hours later, we return to the table. And what was once a group of strangers are now friends who are showing pictures of their relatives. And they're laughing and they're embracing. And they sit down at a table together and they take in a meal. And that, my friends, I think is the essence of community. When we gather at a table and take a meal together, when we feed each other, commune. This is what I think a lot of the problems, the big problems facing our society today could be solved if we just sat at a table and took in a meal. We need to break down the walls. We need to get around a table and eat food together.
Mm. And we can find out information about the classes on the website?
Yeah, check out our website at SantaFeCulinaryAcademy.com. There's our community classes, and we do pop-up dinners. We have all sorts of fun events going on, but we'd love you to come and join us. Sit around the table. Let's build community together.
Now, Teresa, I don't want to leave today's program without talking to you about your annual empanadita making gathering. Has that happened yet this year?
Yes, we did it last Monday, and I wish I would have brought some of the jewels today to show and share with you. It was just such a beautiful occasion. This year, you know, I didn't realize this, but I was being stingy with my process. I'm not stingy with the recipe, and anybody can follow a recipe, but I was being stingy with the process, and my dear niece, she just kept calling me and calling me. Monique said, I want to learn how to do this. And so she came over earlier in the week and helped me prepare everything so that when the people gather, all my siblings and nieces and nephews and husband and friends, when we all gather, it's all ready. Everything is ready, and people don't realize all the process behind it. So it was so nice that I am not being stingy with my process, and that my lovely Monique was able to share in that.
Well, a half dozen years ago, the Valencia County News Bulletin published an article about your annual event called Family is Held Together with Love, Tradition, and Empanadas. And people can search for that. It's the Valencia County News Bulletin. And the recipe is there. We'll hope to have that recipe once we figure out how much shortening we need to put in there. So unbelievably, we are at the end of this program. I do want to thank both of you, Chef Rocky Durham of the Santa Fe Culinary Academy and Teresa Montoya Valverde, for making yourselves available to our listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen.
You can see from the response that was generated, you brought a lot of warmth to people today and enjoyment. Thank you for that. Thanks to our callers to helping our discussion today. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Our assistant producer, Andy Lyman. Michael Hess has handled our phones today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is our final call-in show of 2013. We'll be back with you on January 9th for a year-in-review show. Thanks to all who worked as a dedicated team on this program this year. Happy and tasty holidays to all. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM. News and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.